But our relationship with agriculture and food really stemmed from, once again, my great grandmother, where it is let food be your medicine. And supercharged that with the organic movement, what we realized was, in a world where we're becoming more and more disconnected with our food, we wanted to create space in which we could be connected with our food. And it started with planting stuff in our backyard when we were living in Connecticut, to now we're at a bigger goal, which is part of the sustainability development goal by the UN, which is that 800 million people go to bed hungry every night. So my brothers and I, our mission really is to not only grow chocolate, but grow a variety of crops in the future to help offset that 800 million people going to bed hungry.
You're listening to the Communitas of New York podcast, where we invite you, our business-focused listener, to join us in our strategic focus on business development, specifically with guests who are alumni of the Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program. In our third season, we hold conversations about engagement and community-driven entrepreneurship. Creating positive and hyper-local impact means fostering deep understanding with stakeholders. We invite you to hear entrepreneurs discuss their own experiences with meeting and collaborating with their fellow community members where they are at, developing and serving with carefully designed and innovative solutions. I'm your host, Monique T. Marshall. This is episode 20 with Daniel Maloney of Soul Cacao Craft Chocolates.
Hello, my name is Daniel Maloney, and I'm one of the co-founders at Soul Cacao Craft Chocolates, which is the Bronx first chocolate factory.
Daniel, welcome to Communitas of New York. Good to have you here.
Oh, pleasure to be here.
Yes, and we are going to get all into the amazing things that you and your brothers are doing over at Soul Cacao Crafts Chocolate. But before we get into it, I'd love to take a step back. And if you could tell us a little bit about Soul Cacao and what is it that you do in your venture?
Sure. So Soul Cacao, I would say, stemmed from a passion project for our love for agriculture. Just some history. My great grandparents were cacao farmers in Trinidad and Tobago. And that early upbringing just sort of never left us, being born in Trinidad, growing up on a farm. And it was right around 2009. That was when I would say the organic awakening started on the East Coast. So that was when a lot of people started asking questions like, is this organic? Who's growing this?
Right.
With that, I think, came one of the biggest conversations of our lives, including my brothers and I. My dad said, hey, your great-grandmother grew cacao. And so, just for some clarity, cacao is the bean that is used to make chocolate. So chocolate is a finished product. And I would say up until maybe the age of 17, I always thought chocolate was something made in a lab with a lot of smoke and sugar. Mm-hmm. I never really thought of it as like a plant in the tropics and it grows within a certain region. And that was the aha moment. And even prior to that, we were interested in working in agriculture. But after hearing that story, I would say that's when we said, hey, we wanted to pursue chocolate to continue on a family legacy. But fast forward, here at Soul Cacao, what we do or what makes us unique is we source cacao beans from all over the world, Madagascar, Ecuador, Peru, and Colombia. And here in the Boogie Down Bronx, we transform it into single origin 70% dark chocolate bars, which we ship currently across the country in all 50 states. And we do the whole process here from roasting, grinding, tempering, packaging, and shipping right here in the Boogie Down Bronx.
I love that, in the Boogie Down Bronx. And I love the origin story and just how the roots of your family inspired that. And speaking of the Boogie Down Bronx, as a chocolate manufacturer, how do you create a positive impact in your community in the hyper-local sense? So like in the Bronx?
So thinking hyper-locally, right now we're in the growth phase. So we're scaling the business operations. So what we've been really doing is partnerships through organizations such as UAU, which is sort of a program that allows high school students to get employed and get, you know, real life working skills before they finish high school. And through working with them, we've officially have worked with over 21 high school students as interns. And we've spoken to over 1,500 students because we do offer a history of chocolate class, which we give specifically for people in all around the city. And with that, I've spoken to many high schools and middle schools about the history of chocolate, sort of demystifying, you know, what chocolate is, just like how I just mentioned earlier in the conversation.
Yes, certainly demystifying, because in the beginning, we got a lesson. I did not know that about the cacao being the bean used to make the chocolate. So love that you shared that and provided that insight. And then also, speaking of, you kind of mentioned how the beans are sourced from all over the world and created the chocolate here in the Boogie Down Bronx. I want to talk more about the impact on the broader scale. So what have you seen, or what is that impact on a broader scale?
So on a broader scale, the way SoCacao make a difference is most farmers, the average age is 68 years old. And then also fast forward, most farmers also make less than a dollar a day, right, in working with cacao. And you could imagine, you know, the very food that we absolutely love, how could the people doing the most work receive the lowest amount of profit? So what we did was we wanted to create a fully integrated business. We're talking from the soil all the way to before it arrives at the customer. And on the soil level, which we saw was, we realized that, hey, it would be difficult for us to be farmers right away, right? So what we did was we created SoCacao as an intermediary, right? Where we're able to work with farmers, pay them the exact wages they asked for that would incentivize them to continue to do the good work of protecting the lands. And most cases, most of these farmers have these farms for over 5 generations, 6 generations. So by us paying them exactly what they need, they're not only able to preserve it, they're even able to scale the business for future generations. Now, fast forward in the Bronx, you know, we're kind of witnessing a digital revolution in real time. Yeah. So what we wanted to do was teach people here in the Bronx a unique craft, similar to being an electrician or being a baker or being a plumber. We wanted to add chocolate making as a category, because when you look at some of the countries in Europe or Australia, even China or Japan, people make full life careers out of working with chocolate. And that's what we wanted to do here. We wanted to create that ripple effect to get people interested and create that ecosystem to put the Bronx as the on the map as a world-class chocolate-making destination.
That is so beautiful. And I love the fact that you are not only thinking about locality and this generation of chocolate makers, but you're also thinking about the future, like you mentioned. So on your website, it says, "We strive to inspire the next generation of chocolate makers." Where is this next generation, and how do you connect with them? And are some of these the students that you mentioned?
Correct. So I call it the will of fire. The reason why we talk to high schools or take on interns is it only takes one, right? One ripple to make a difference. And, you know, I firmly believe the same way how I studied electrical engineering. And if I wasn't in this one speech in high school and I almost went home, if I didn't hear that one speech, I don't think I would have taken the route that I took in pursuit.
Wow.
So similar to how that made an impact for me. And, you know, part of our vision is to inspire the next generation of chocolate makers, chocolate eaters, and chocolatiers. But in that same line, part of it is also to ignite that same passion that we have for chocolate within someone else. So it's not so much about chocolate making as much as it is the story that within each of us, there is a story to tell. And even if it's through chocolate, seeing us work with chocolate and building this brand in real time, we hope that would ignite that same fire to say, hey, my auntie was a great baker. I know I could be a baker as well, right? Or my uncle is one of a world-class barber, or my cousin isn't a fantastic lawyer, and it runs in the family. So those little spikes of sort of naturally given talent, that's what we hope to inspire, not only through chocolate, but just through teaching and talking about entrepreneurship and the power of how it could change your community.
Certainly. And speaking of like running into the family and the fact that now you're not only thinking about the next generation, but you were really thinking about ancestry in the sense of where does this knowledge come from, as well as where does the cacao come from, which is mainly the small family forums. So can you speak to the kind of connections that you foster with communities all over the globe in this regard?
Mm-hmm. So what's interesting is that in most countries, and this might be a broad stroke, in a lot of Caribbean cultures, you know, everyone has a little plot of land, whether it's in Latin America, the Caribbean, I would even go as far as to say Africa, Southeast Asia. If you're growing up in the countryside, your main stream of income is what you grow, and then you travel into the city to sell your produce in the market. That was very humbling for myself because that's how I grew up in Trinidad until I was like 6 to 7 years old. And in a generation where talking about monocultures and a lack of biodiversity in agriculture, all it takes is one farmer protecting a seed that could fight against a potential disease that could wipe an entire crop out. So when I speak to these farmers, the conversation I tend to have is about, tell me something that I don't know, or share that knowledge, right? Because for them, it might just be a job. But for me, it's like, hey, I want to hear your story so I could tell it through the chocolate. So I view it as, you know, my job right now at this stage in the business is to collect these stories and do my best job as a chocolate maker to bring out the best flavor and that story in the chocolate that we're making here at Soul Cacao.
Yes. I love that. And speaking of upbringing and just the awareness of this rural / urban divide, what is your own relationship or you and your brother's relationships to land and working with the land?
Soul Cacao is founded by my brothers and I, Dominic, Nicholas, and myself, Daniel. And with family at the core of it, what we realized was that, hey, most people, after they finish college, they just kind of disperse. They don't hang around, you know, close to family as much as you would think. And my brothers and I, you know, we didn't want this for ourselves. We wanted a centralized place in which we could always come together and put our energy towards a singular goal. So with that, really stemmed this, as I said, this passion project to continue on my great-grandmother legacy of working with chocolate. But our relationship with agriculture and food really stemmed from, once again, my great-grandmother, where it is, let food be your medicine. And supercharged that with the organic movement, what we realized was, in a world where we're becoming more and more disconnected with our food, we wanted to create space in which we could be connected with our food. And it started with planting stuff in our backyard when we were living in Connecticut, to now we're at a bigger goal, which is part of the sustainability development goal by the UN, which is that 800 million people go to bed hungry every night. So my brothers and I, our mission really is to not only grow chocolate, but grow a variety of crops in the future to help offset that 800 million people going to bed hungry.
Wow. And I love that goal. That is such a great goal. And I did not even know that. And so, again, insightful. And I also love that you speak about the influence of your grandparents in food being your medicine. And so how do you integrate some of the other knowledge from your great grandparents in the work at Soul Cacao? Are there any specific techniques or tricks that have lived on throughout your chocolate manufacture process?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the best is never work on an empty stomach. I think it's so important that when you're full and you're taken care of and you're working with a food product, I feel like there's more to give, right? More energy to give in the food. Also, let food be your medicine. My great-grandparents lived until 103 years old.
Wow.
And even at the age of 80, 90, I remembered her carrying baskets of cassava and sorrel, you know, doing her 5-mile walk in the morning as though that was nothing for someone that age. So, you know, with let food be your medicine, never do work on an empty stomach, those kind of values are things that I hold near and there. And I'm looking forward to the next chapter, which is, you know, when we're working with farmers more closely in Trinidad, and then we're able to understand what she saw with the chocolate growing process.
Yes. And do these considerations about the land and food as medicine make your work manufacturing chocolate more meaningful in a borough of the city of New York. So like in that city landscape and being that in that place that used to be made of family farms before it was industrialized in the 19th century.
Well, yes, because where we are, where we're based in the South Bronx, you know, we have access to large wholesale food products. The reality is parts of the Bronx still lives within a food desert. And the opportunity for just a healthier standard of food needs to be created. So when we set up Soul Cacao, what we wanted was to create a chocolate bar with minimal ingredients, with ingredients you could pronounce as well, because most chocolate, I feel like you flip it over, it's like 20 ingredients and then chocolate is all the way at the end. So when we got into this, what we wanted to bring to the Bronx was a higher standard of what chocolate could be.
Yeah.
Because at 70% and above, that's where the bulk of the nutritional benefits comes in. Just to kind of rattle off a few, there's been scientific research about dark chocolate being an antidepressant, a mood enhancer. It's good for, you know, dopamine. So it makes you feel good after you eat a half a bar. It also allows your body to absorb more nutrients from the foods you eat. And I know back in the 1800s and 1900s, basically medicine would be coated with chocolate, right? And then people would be able to eat it. So we're trying to bring back the original way in which chocolate should have been respected, which is one of the ultimate superfoods in the world. And that's what we're bringing here to the Bronx and what we hope to bring to the world.
So medicine used to be coated with chocolate? That's interesting. So, and speaking of, so there is your passion and inspirational story. And then there's your practical day-to-day of running your business. So these next questions, we're going to get into the more practicality of things. So did you have the knowledge of running a business before you started Soul Cacao, or did you just hit the ground running?
So we had no knowledge of running a business. How we started, we were just more interested in figuring out how to make a chocolate bar. And then over time, whenever we felt we needed a missing piece, we were able to, you know, go to YouTube University and figure it out. So we were very fortunate to being able to persevere through those challenges, you know, late nights watching videos or reading PDFs. And that's how we gained the knowledge. Had I known what I knew now, I would definitely recommend learning a little bit about business first, because I felt like things could have been easier. However, I'm happy I went through that because I was able to walk a path that I think many entrepreneurs follow in the very early stages of their entrepreneurial journey. So I'm happy to have gone through that because I could share that knowledge going forward.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times as entrepreneurs, it's like you don't know until you go through certain things. Like school won't teach you all the things. So I think experience is the best teacher sometimes. But I definitely get what you're saying in terms of like knowing the foundations of business is important as well. So now let's get into your product. Is your chocolate vegan, and what kinds of flavors are present in your delicious products?
Sure. So our chocolate is vegan, soy-free, nut-free, and then it's low in sugar. And what makes cacao unique is the genetic name is called Theobroma cacao. In that genetic strand, there's over 1,000 different varieties, but only one of them could be used to make chocolate, okay? And what makes this amazing is depending on where the cacao tree grows, it picks up natural flavor from the soil, right? So in the chocolate world, if you're getting chocolate from Papua New Guinea, it'll naturally have a earthy, smoky, caramely taste. If you get chocolate from Madagascar, it will naturally taste like raisin, plums, and cherries. Just like wine, just like champagne, just like coffee. So in the name Soul Cacao, which is sun, and then the cacao bean, through our chocolate making process, we try to bring out sort of those unique flavors out of the chocolate bars. So with that being said, we only use 3 ingredients in our chocolates, just organic cane sugar, organic cocoa butter, and then organic cacao beans from Madagascar, Ecuador, Peru, and Colombia. So all of the flavors you get is natural to the bean itself. So just to kind of walk you through some of the flavors, Peru tends to be very floral. You get hints of like oak in it, as well as some coconut as well. Our Ecuador bar, we just swapped out the beans, so you're going to get notes of hazelnuts and walnuts naturally, so it's still nut free. Those are just flavors that's innate to the bean. Colombia is like a little bit of spice with some of those caramel notes and a nice savory finish. And then Madagascar, we call it our red wine bar because it tastes like a raisinette. It tastes like a chocolate covered raisin naturally.
Wow. So phenomenal. And where exactly is your manufactory, and has it changed locations or been augmented in any way since you started?
So this is actually a fun story. Soul Cacao started in a church. Wow. It started at the theological seminary over there in near Columbia University. We started in a shared kitchen space. And we were there for about 2 months, but those 2 months really allowed us to learn what it took to set up a kitchen. Then we signed our first lease, I would say not even 1 year into doing business here in the Bronx. And at first, I think we overshot it a little bit. It was like 1,800 square feet. Mm-hmm. So it was massive for the small piece of equipment we had. But what ended up happening is right before the pandemic, we downsized. And I share this with any entrepreneur. Sometimes on the entrepreneurial journey, you might view something as a loss, and it's not really a loss. It's more like a redirection to do something even bigger. Right. And by us downsizing, it really allowed us to scale and grow the business the right way at the stage that we were in. And that made such a difference in us being able to grow. And the following year, the pandemic happened. And as a result of the pandemic happening, that allowed us to be able to manage our expense and be able to do a digital transformation internally and tell our story on a larger scale.
That is wonderful. And you speak about having to downsize and realizing at first, we don't need all of this for the equipment we have. So speaking of equipment, what kind of equipment does a chocolate manufacturer need?
So you would be amazed. I think most people are surprised. So one, you need a roaster, of course, to roast the beans. You need something called a cracker or a winnower, which separates the shell from the nibs. You also need a grinder. It's a grinder that could be used to make peanut butter, pistachio butter, hummus, but something that would grind the bean down to a particular amount of microns. And why that's important is whenever you eat a piece of chocolate, if it's not at a certain micron, it would be gritty or sandy. So that is the grinding process is the longest process. It takes about 4 days to get the chocolate as smooth as we would like. And then you need a machine called a tempering machine. Some people hand temper. We use a machine due to the volume that we're making, but without the tempering process, the chocolate bar would never be shiny and it wouldn't snap. Okay. So that's the science behind it. And then last but not least is a fridge, because you got to cool the bars down right when you make it. Because when it comes out of the machine, it's coming out around 88 to 92 degrees. So you need to cool it down to 60 degrees as quickly as possible. And you would need a fridge for that. And then aside from that, you need some labor of love. Package everything by hand here after the bars have been produced. And that takes a village to do. So we're very thankful for the interns and everyone who supports that part of the process before we ship it out the
door. Wonderful. I am loving the learning here. And also, Daniel, can you tell us the difference between a cacao bean and a cocoa powder or cocoa butter?
Sure. Actually, it's the same thing. Oh. It's just how it's processed, okay? So if I take a cacao bean and I press it under a hydraulic press, right? And the reason I say a hydraulic press is because you really need to put pressure on it. And then the byproducts you get is two things. You get cocoa butter, which most large generic brands, they sell the cocoa butter to cosmetic brands, right? Mm. And what's left behind is like, imagine a brick of just powder, like cocoa powder. That's what's left behind. And what a lot of industrial makers do is they take that powder, right? Because they squeezed out all of the oil, the cocoa butter, and they have to reintroduce some form of oil. And they reintroduce it in the sense of palm oil or a different sort of vegetable oil. And then they use stabilizers such as soy lecithin, which is why they ask if it's soy free, because you're adding soy to stabilize the chocolate. Right. Because cocoa butter would be stable at room temperature, but not palm oil or a different oil-based product. So anyway, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. But long story short, the cacao bean, if separated, you get two byproducts. You get cocoa butter and then you get cocoa powder. Okay. Mm. So it is the same product, just processed differently.
Noted. And you also mentioned bean to bar. So does bean to bar mean that you go directly from the bean into cocoa production in your manufactory?
That is correct. So similar to coffee, bean to cup, right? For a coffee company, bean to bar means here at Soul Cacao, we start our production at the bean, at the raw beans, and we roast and grind the beans into its finished product. And our vision is to someday be able to do tree-to-bar, where we're growing the cacao beans and we're bringing it here in the Bronx, and we're able to process it here in the Bronx, and we could distribute it not only here locally but around the world.
Tree-to-bar, that is so amazing. Forward thinking about the future. Love that. And one of the things you also mentioned is industrial makers. So can you speak a little bit on the ethical issues that might come up with labor and global cocoa production, specifically child or forced labor?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest challenges in the industry is lack of transparency. So obviously in certain countries, there are specific laws where farmers are locked into these long contracts. And these long contracts, it doesn't matter if there's a shortage or the cost of supply increase, these farmers are locked into very low wages. And you could see how that could affect them, because right now the price of cocoa increased by almost 100%. Wow. And the farmers who got locked into those bad contracts, they're not able to benefit at all from that 100% markup. So, and that's not even taking into consideration how post-COVID, the cost of many materials skyrocketed. So not only are they not able to partake in the benefit of, you know, the price increase, but they're also being hit separately with the increase of price just to produce the crop. So I think that's a major challenge in the industry. Second is traceability. And I think this plays into, you know, a lot of the child slavery ethical challenges within the sector, because we don't know where these beans are coming from, and we don't know who's really growing it. All we know is that a bag of beans has been bagged up and is ready for sale. Mm-hmm. And because of that lack of transparency, we don't know who these farmers are. They could be children who's not going to school but choosing to work, because that's what they have to do. But because of that, I think that's a major issue, because I know if most people are aware of who's producing their farmers, especially if it's underage children, I doubt producers would be buying those beans. So I think by increasing that traceability, by giving us more visibility into who's producing the crop, and also by being more stricter around where and who is producing it, I think that could claw back some of that and get some of those young children back to schools, back into other sectors to push their countries into the stratosphere of success. So I think those are just two challenges. And then last but not least is climate change. I think climate change is becoming more and more and more of a challenge, but I also am hopeful, because what people say is they believe the cacao tree could save the rainforest. And because of how valuable the cacao tree is in producing chocolate, there's a belief that by planting cacao trees around areas could protect them from being deforested in the future. So deforestation for cattle grazing and so forth versus planting cacao trees and intercropping it with cassava or banana trees and so forth, we could do more on one plot of land than just, you know, producing one crop, which isn't really helping the country as a whole. I know that was a lot.
But no, it's very good, very insightful. And of course, you have close relationships with the farmers with whom you work. So you have that visibility and that relationship organically built into your own work.
Correct.
That's right. And then you also mentioned like these wild fluctuations in the cacao market with record high prices in early 2025. So what impact does this have on Soul Cacao's business?
So one of the biggest thing is because the raw material costs so much, so sugar went up, our packaging went up, the beans went up. So our profit margins decrease with these fluctuations. And then you could imagine, you could start off in January, maybe pay a couple of thousands for a few bags, only to find out that you come back and that same thousand doubled, right, in less than a year. Mm-hmm. So you could imagine the impact. If I'm taking out a loan to grow my business, that loan might not be able to go as far as I had anticipated when I first took it out. So it forces us to then increase the price of the bar, and it pushes it up at a premium level. I think this year we just increased the price of our bar to $9. And I'll give you an example. During the pandemic, we reduced our price because we felt that, hey, it's a rough time for everyone. Let's reduce the price instead of putting more pressure on the customer because of the uncertainty. So unfortunately, it affects us in two ways. One is that our profit margins decrease, which prevents us from hiring and more people locally. Then on the front end, the cost of the material goes up, which means we buy less beans from the farmers we work with. So however they were able to benefit, maybe they have to get ahead further with a lot less coming in from bean to bar makers. And just in the industry as a whole, the last 2 years has been an extremely difficult year. A lot of bean to bar chocolate makers has gone out of business. And I think one of the reasons why we've been so lucky is because we've just been growing very slowly and reinvesting every penny and owning the equipment. And because of that, our business is able to withstand certain economic shocks, such as COVID or some of the tariff challenges we're seeing right now. But I think had we had done it differently, I think it would be a real challenge for us to stay afloat, especially in this current environment.
Certainly. And then on the other side of that, there's also this issue of maintaining quality. So I saw that demand has gone up for dark chocolate due to more people learning about the health benefits of cacao. And I know that this kind of chocolate requires more beans than milk chocolate. And I know that you also put a lot of emphasis on your product's quality. Has this demand and the cut in output due to crop disease, smuggling, climate change force you to rethink about quality control or sourcing?
No, you know, the fabric of the brand is really to produce the highest quality chocolate with the least possible ingredients. And the farmers we work with only makes up about 10% of annual harvest. So what we do on the top end and doing what we do is we're able to keep some of those rarer, hard to find flavors alive. Yeah. For future generations to enjoy. So despite the price fluctuation and those challenges, the fabric of the brand is about allowing people to have a unique chocolate experience. So that's sort of unwaverable. I think we'll continue to do dark chocolate because you're able to do that. We may look into potentially other products, but because of the health benefits at 70% and above, I think we'll keep it dark because I think that's where the best benefit for eating chocolate really resides.
Yeah. And so the same commitment means that you can withstand these recent economic developments, such as the tariffs and all the things that are shifting. So that's great. And, you know, sticking to the mission of the brand.
That's right.
And so now let's focus on collaboration, because that is the theme of the podcast. So Daniel, you, along with your brothers, Dominic and Nicholas, are the three brothers and co-founders of Soul Cacao. And of course, the focus of this podcast is collaboration, and collaboration amongst family is a particular kind of collaboration. So do you naturally gravitate towards particular roles and responsibility as you all work together?
Yes. And, you know, I work with my brothers, so all of our personalities are different. And then career-wise, we all have very different backgrounds. So prior to getting into chocolate full-time, I was a construction project manager. So when it comes to scheduling or timing or projections or administrative documentation, that's my strength. And I'm very thankful I was able to kind of work in corporate for a little bit to get those skills, because I would feel for someone if they just started a business without seeing how processes and procedures works in a different organization.
Yeah.
And then applying it to your business to let it grow. Dominic he works in cybersecurity, so he's always tinkering with things and trying to fix it. So as a result of that, Dominic is naturally the producer, right? He's the main chocolate maker. So he uses his approach to really refine our operations and scale it up so that we're able to continue to hit the man. Last but not least is my middle brother, Nicholas. Nicholas is a nurse. He's a psychiatric nurse. So he pays attention more to the well-being of the customer, right? Really focusing on those success stories, customer engagement, marketing, and sales. So that's sort of how we broke up our business. I do a lot of the finance and administrative stuff. Dominic focuses more on operations and logistics and sourcing. And then Nicholas focused more on community engagement as well as marketing and sales. And that's how we divided. So I'm very thankful because in most cases, most businesses don't have that sort of delegation, right? You would have to hire someone or even a family member, right? But I'm very thankful that my brothers and I, and we're very close in age, that we were able to kind of share and leverage each other's strengths to grow Soul Cacao.
That is so beautiful. And how does working with a family create a specific kind of support structure or structure of think partnership that may be unique to your venture amongst other ventures?
You know, we've always been around each other. I think the challenge is that when you're working in business with your brother, it's the line gets blurred very easily between family and business, right? Yeah. So I think lately what my brothers and I have been doing is we've been more intentional about creating space where we can just be brothers and not worry about Soul Cacao as much, because if we're not good as a family, then that would spill into the business, right? So that's one thing that I wish early on in the business we would have focused a little bit more on, because we were so obsessed with just grow the business. We got to work hard, hard, hard. You know that, that hustle culture. Instead of saying, hey, behind the hustler, it's a real person with real dreams. And I would say working with my brothers now has just become even better, because I think now we've been able to redefine our relationship as adults. And I feel like now we're just knocking things out of the park because we re-baseline our communication to say, hey, this is how we work together. And it's been a wonderful thing.
That is wonderful. And how do you all employ creative thinking amongst each other?
Well, that's hard because I'm the foodie. So I'm the guy who's always watching Food Network or some YouTube channel. Dominic, sometimes he's the purist. So of course we butt heads because I'm always like, come on, the customers want flavor.
Yeah.
But then he's like, hey, no, like it's about making the best chocolate. But I think now we're creating spaces to be creative. I think there's one thing for a customer to go on your website and buy one product, but I think it's a difference to create moments within your business to delight the customer. So we're working on some exciting projects in which we could sort of unleash a little bit more of our creative potential in working with chocolate.
Yes. But those are health and wellness benefits remain if you still create those delightful moments, I think.
Yes.
And so does Soul Cacao engage in research about the health and well-being benefits of cacao? Or what do you look for such information and research?
So, you know, I read a ton of books. I read a lot about the crop genetic. And all of this is in preparation for when I meet the farmers, I'm able to really meet them where they are, which is on the soil. But yeah, I'm an avid reader, not only myself. So I'm always reading PDF or market research, reading challenges. And then, you know, the more I learn, the more we're able to incorporate it into the business. So PDFs, research papers, books on the history of chocolate, all of those things help us understand. It allows us to respect and appreciate the cacao bean that much more. And with that knowledge, we're able to share that with our customers.
Yes, that is certainly true. Always learning in entrepreneurship. So that's great. And Dan, you had any kind of eureka moments? If so, what have they been? And are there any revelations or something that really made you reflect on the way that you guide your business, whether as thinking partners or individually?
Yes, I think it was when we started working with interns. That was like a very awakening moment because we took on the interns as a way to understand how it would feel to work with someone outside of the family, you know? And that was such a huge thing for us because my cousin would help, my uncle would help, my mom, my father would help. But for the first time, we were dependent on someone outside of the family to help. And what that showed me is you have to trust people naturally, believe in them, right? Believe in them that they would put their best foot forward. And since changing that mindset, it just kind of allowed me to say, gotta see where people are and create space for them to grow in their own lives as well. And I felt like that helped kind of stabilize what it means to be a leader or to lead people. It's not so much about telling people what to do and then they do it, but it's more about how do you inspire them to believe in themselves, to do their best work with what is given. So I would say really working with the interns just kind of helped me see myself and sort of how would I feel if someone spoke to me a certain way or inspired me a certain way. So it allowed me to really kind of redefine not only myself, but my two brothers on what kind of leaders do we want to be here at Soul Cacao. And that's been a very powerful journey. Continue to work with more interns and prepare to hire more employees.
Yeah, I work with interns as well. So I can definitely relate to that when you were saying that. And I was going to ask about reality check moments. So would you call that a reality check moment or have there been any other reality check moments?
Yes, I feel like that was a reality check.
Yeah.
You know how they say, hey, it's no I and we. This was one of those moments of like, oh, this is the village. These are the people. And even if an intern is there for 3 months, they still played a part to build the journey.
Right.
So that was like such a humbling experience to see that help comes in many shapes and forms. And even when we got the intern, I think we were just getting ready to roll out our product to Target. And right before we got it into all of the Target stores, if we didn't have the interns, there was no way we would have hit some of those deadlines. So it really showed us how sometimes you shouldn't try to do everything by yourself. There's always people there who could help you on your journey. That was a reality check that get out of your head, get out of your factory, meet people who would help you on your journey.
Certainly. And it seems like this is really partly about perspective or perspective shift. So even for you all, how has your work together on Soul Cacao over time shifted your perspective in terms of your ventures in those measurable terms like inputs, funding, or social impact outcomes?
In perspective, I think we were absolutely crazy for how we started. So we started the business with $500, you know, using our own personal money. I mean, spending hundreds of dollars. I was like 22, just finished college with just a pocket full of dreams, right? Just saying, hey, this is what we wanted. But I think now there's so much. There's banks, there's finance, there's way to finance your business. So had I had known, maybe we would have financed the business better. But remember what I said, I'm also thankful we didn't, because if we would have took out a loan to start the business before we even knew how we made a dollar, I think we could have squandered the money on some bad things. So I think because we took the slow approach, we were able to grow. But I think we're at the point now where our perspective on what finance is different, because sometimes we just need a little piece of equipment to produce 400 more bars a month. So we're kind of boiling down it to say, okay, what do we need to hit our financial goal for this year? So now I feel like we got the well-oiled machine going, and the perspective about what is capital has now changed, because I think the biggest thing is just money. If you're doing the good work, the money will come. I cannot overstate that enough.
Yeah.
And many of the times where we needed that extra grinder, we needed to buy beans, we needed to buy packaging, the money came from whether it's a random order or a conversation I had with someone randomly. As long as you know what you're doing and you believe in what you're doing and you have the metrics to back it up, which we knew for a very long time, leverage financial institutions to fund your ideas instead of using your own personal savings. I think that was one perspective shift that I've acquired now that I've been doing business for quite some time.
Yeah, and that's great. And now, speaking of, we've talked about collaboration, and since we are recording on the Communitas of New York podcast, so you've had a collaborative relationship with Communitas America. You've been an active participant in the Ventures Accelerator program. You've spoken to venture cohorts as guests, and you've shared your experience through Communitas events with your voice amplified throughout our greater community. Can you kind of speak more about this relationship?
So I would say the relationship with Communitas started really sort of how this conversation started. It was right before a podcast meeting, and I was able to meet a former colleague. Her name was Esmeralda. And Esmeralda sort of explained what Communitas had been doing in Harlem for a very long time.
Esmeralda Herrera was the Director of Programs and Community Relations at Communitas America.
I said, hey, I would love to be able to help. If there's any way that we could help, just let us know. And long story short, we were invited to speak to, I believe it was a very early on cohort, maybe cohort 9 or 10. And from that moment, we've been working with Communitas. One, as a guest speaker, where we just kind of talk about the journey of what it takes to create a startup. But what made it a full circle moment is... The day I met Communitas, it was the day we were doing a podcast to be able to speak now with Communitas, as well as yourself, Monique, here today on a podcast. So I feel like it's just a full circle moment of how the world works.
Yes, that is definitely a full circle moment. And we are so glad you're here. And in addition to that, you were recently on a food justice panel at Communitas Hay Ground Harlem Incubator Space. What meaningful conversations came out of that experience?
You know, what blew my mind is I thought I knew what food justice meant, but through working with that cohort, I felt like I not only understood what food justice meant and the power of it, but I couldn't believe how food justice could shape itself in so many different ways, through policy, through producing healthier food for your community, through having a local farmer's garden, teaching students about growing their own food and being self-sufficient. So I felt like going through that cohort really brought me back to the foundation of why we started Soul Cacao, which was to make sure no one goes to bed hungry. So I felt like it was something that I needed to hear. And just through speaking at it, it reminded me of why we continue to do what I do. So it was just wonderful to be a part of that.
That is wonderful. And have there been any other connections to other institutions or partners that you've made or grown through the Communitas network or ecosystem?
Yeah, well, first of all, I was able to meet you, Monique, you know, Black to Business, which is incredible, your work. Mm-hmm. We've also been able to just meet so many other local entrepreneurs who I see on the street of Harlem when I'm walking home. You know, I think the Communitas organization and network, in my opinion, is world class, because in most cohorts you go in, people introduce their business and you never hear from them again.
Yeah. You know,
I feel like Communitas has been able to create these touch points where people have been able to come together well beyond the cohorts to come together and meet and say, how are you doing? How can we help each other out? And I love the ecosystem that Communitas has built.
But I agree. And speaking of local entrepreneurs, have you collaborated with any other Communitas Ventures alumni or had any mentorship experiences?
Not as much as I would have liked, but I will say this. Through the food justice cohort, I have been able to get our products in some gift bags and some fundraisers, and we've been keeping in contact that way. But I think this fall we'll be in a position where we can really unleash our collaborative effort with other entrepreneurs. So I'm looking forward to that chapter.
Yes. And are there any people or partnerships that you want to highlight?
One is for the work you do, Monique. I think it's amazing to kind of let people know that, yes, there's entrepreneurs of color who even and shaking. And it's people like your organization who offers a platform to tell our story, like even in our conversation today with Communitas and yourself. I would also like to shout out Tashi with her hula hoop organization.
Yes.
The amount of energy and passion of her work, it's amazing what she does for community.
Daniel is referring to Natasha Burrell, Communitas Ventures alumna, with her venture Hula Hoop Fit 366.
And I think when I see other fellow entrepreneurs doing work like that for their community, it makes me want to go even that much more harder. So I just want to shout out Tashi for her amazing work and her energy, her hustle energy. You know, everything about it is like what it means to be an entrepreneur. So I got to put some respect on her name.
That is true. Yeah. She always has the energy and amazing. And I'm like, the nostalgia. I love it, love it, love it. And now I want to kind of talk about the challenges and lessons. So what are some of the funding sources that you have had? How do you deal with funding beyond the sales?
Yeah. So, you know, we compete for a lot of grants every year. I kind of channel this. So at the beginning of every year, I set a goal for how much grant funds would I like to get, right? And I also put, hey, if given this amount, this is what I would do with the money, right? Like some people would go on a shopping spree or, you know, it's just goes crazy. Like I want to make sure that whatever money we get, we're able to buy a piece of equipment to help our business grow or we could take care of our team better. So the majority of how we funded our business, it was through competing in business competitions, which, you know, we were very lucky to have come up, you know, whether it's first or second or third, we walked away with something. And not only that, it allowed us to even public speak even better. So it's not just about financial, it's putting yourself out there for people to know who you are and what you do. But our primary source is the revenue we get from sales. We do a lot of pop-ups across New York City, and through certain partnerships with MasterCard, we've been able to kind of work with them to do special business events and chocolate tasting events and stuff like that. Last but not least, which we haven't unleashed yet, is we're looking to take out our first small business loan in order to hire more employees in our factory going into the fall season. So that's an exciting chapter that we have coming up, and we're looking forward to embrace the knowledge that comes with that chapter as well.
Love that. And you also mentioned pop-ups. So where beyond your website and pop-ups and partnerships can we buy SoCaCao?
So you could get SoCaCao at Motley Kitchen, which is one of our local Bronx spots. You could get us at Farmers Markets on 110th Street. We do little collaborations with the Bronx Brewery and so forth. And also, let me just put this out there. Right now, we're doubling down on manufacturing. We're on the second floor of an industrial building. But we really hope in the next couple of years, as things kind of calibrate a little bit, to open our first brick and mortar location where people could come in and learn the chocolate making process. So we hope when that chapter emerges and all of our finance is in order, meaning the grants and the loans and everything, we'll be able to bring more of our customers into what we're doing. And we would have that serendipitous random encounters where people could come in and be amazed at what businesses are here in the Bronx.
Love that. That is amazing. The in-person experience. People love that. And yeah, Daniel, so there is funding and then there's time. So how do you all manage your time in working on your venture? When the demand becomes high for your product, how do you manage this while also keeping the admin aspect of business going?
I'm happy you say that because that is the biggest challenge. I think people underestimate how difficult writing and sending emails are. You know what I mean?
Yes, I agree.
I feel like that's a whole job in itself, you know? Yeah. But I would say what gets me through it is that I have to remember when we started the SoCaCao, we had hoped and prayed for moments like these where we're working hard, we're shipping out this order, and then on the other end of that, we're able to get paid. Customers are delighted that the product came on time and their clients enjoyed it. So I would say when times get tough, I'm reminded of why we're doing this, and why we're doing this is to inspire the next generation of chocolate makers, chocolate eaters, and chocolatiers in the Bronx and beyond. And not until we see that through, I'm sure there will be a lot of challenging times ahead until that becomes the reality. So yeah, that keeps us motivated, especially when the pressure is high. Now, I'm not going to just sugarcoat it and boil it down that simple, because on the flip side, it's also been a lot of challenges too. I had to say no to certain events. I couldn't go to that birthday party. I couldn't go to that 3-day trip in Mexico because I had to work. So what I've given up is some of my free time, but in return, what I've gotten is a certain set of skills and knowledge that could help me and my brothers change the community of the Bronx and also create a generation of chocolate enthusiasts. And that's what keeps us going.
I love that. And so with that, there are so many moving parts: running a manufacturer, distribution and shipping, sales, marketing. How do you recommend other entrepreneurs that are in this same situation to manage all of these different kinds of tasks efficiently?
Yeah, I would say definitely leverage ChatGPT. I think early on, you know, we didn't have ChatGPT when we first started our business. But I think now with things like ChatGPT, you could probably come up with schedules to help manage your time, to help you grow your business. So I think there's just way more tools available. So understand what sort of technology works for you. And also, before you even start, talk to other entrepreneurs who might be able to give you advice on what you can do for yourself to help grow your business. And 9 out of 10 times, they'll give you a piece of information that probably would have took you years or months to figure out. So I would say really lean on technology as a framework to help understand how you want to build your business from the ground up, and lean on the network at Communitas as an ecosystem to help you tease out your ideas and thoughts on how you should move forward.
Yes, that is some solid advice. Daniel, you mentioned in the conversation, you know, you all took the slower route and you're so thankful for that. Do you have any advice for other entrepreneurs in terms of how to stay resilient and committed as you sustain a business?
Yeah, I think my advice is really get a bookkeeper, because I don't want to say, hey, business is hard, like be gritty. I don't think it's true. Sometimes you might not be working with the right product, or you just need to revamp your story. So make sure you look at all of those aspects of business: operation, logistics, marketing, sales, branding, vision. If you've done all of the work and you've maxed out that area and you're still having some difficulties, then maybe speak to someone to figure out if this is really the right industry for you. Because sometimes it might not be your first business. It might be your second. It might be your third. But the whole point is that you're doing business. And a lot of people don't take that leap of faith to try and grow a business from the ground up. But that knowledge never leaves you, and it becomes a part of who you are in your fabric.
That is some good advice. You are doing business. No matter which business it is, what number you're doing business. I love that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And let's talk about the future. So you mentioned a brick and mortar store and also being creative with flavors. Are there any other future goals for Soul Cacao that you want to put out there in the universe here?
Our goal in starting Soul Cacao is really to put the Bronx on the map as a world-class award-winning chocolate borough or in the city, period. I don't want to hear Brooklyn or Manhattan. I want to hear the Bronx has the best chocolate.
Brooklyn! And
but really, I would say, seeing that through to the finish line and hearing people say, oh yeah, I'm going to a Yankees game, I'm going to the Bronx Zoo, I got to pick up the best beer at the Bronx Brewery, I got to pick up some of the best chocolate from Soul Cacao. Like, this is what I want to hear the conversation to be in the future. So on top of hiring locally, inspiring the next generation of chocolate makers, I hope that we're able to put the Bronx on the map as a world-class chocolate destination. Right up there with hip-hop. You know, we want to add to hip-hop, to rap, to culture, to breakdancing. We want to add chocolate right up there on that band that says, yes, we also make that here in the Bronx. And we hope in the history books in the future, when myself and my brothers are long gone, people are able to say, wow, what an interesting time it might have been in the Bronx, where chocolate was being built, an industry, a revolution was taking place. And we're in it right now, creating that history. So I'm very thankful to be doing this. And I'm happy chocolate chose us, right, as a dream to pursue, and what that means for the Bronx and us seeing this through.
Yes, I love a grand vision, and I can see it. The work that you, your brother Dominic, and Nicholas are doing is phenomenal. And it really speaks to the power of collaboration, doing things together as family. And I can't thank you all enough for the impact that you all are making at Soul Cacao, and also for being on the Communitas podcast. And I know people are listening. They're like, okay, yeah, we want to help them make it happen. So where can people find you, support you, and all the things?
Sure. So the best way to find us is on www.soulcacao.com.
Yes.
And even if you can't purchase a bar right now in this moment, a follow on social media is just as much as buying a bar. So we would appreciate you if you follow us on Facebook or follow us on Instagram, which is at Soul Cacao. Follow us on this journey. Join us on this journey of building and establishing the Bronx first chocolate factory here in the Bronx.
Daniel, thank you again for being on Communitas of New York and doing the work that you are doing.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. Absolute pleasure.
Likewise. Visit our website for more information about this and all of our shows. You can find that as well as information about the entrepreneurs and conversation in the show notes. Thank you for listening and see you soon. My name is Monique T. Marshall and this is Communitas of New York. Season 3 is produced by Simone Jean and David Michael D. Gregoria.